a little bit. And in switching gears, Paul is really trying to bring to the Galatians' mind what piece of information, what is this section that we're talking about in, if somebody could give it a summary. Better not do that. The purpose of the law. Okay. The purpose of the law of Moses and clarifying what it was and more importantly, what it was not. What else? All right. The contrast from that law. Contrasting with what? All right. So whenever we look at that, am I too loud? Do I need to move it down or up, or am I okay? Okay, I'm good. I feel like I'm yelling, so y'all just have to forgive me. Whenever you begin to talk about this subject, I think it's difficult not to, without going back to a little bit of history, to understand. Hebrews does a good job of it, and Paul in Romans does an excellent job of talking about it. If you've got a lot of questions, I found for me that it was very beneficial to go to Romans and Hebrews, because it really does give a lot. But I wanted to ask another question, and it's going to be a question that the first time you see it, you may kind of raise one eyebrow. Was Abraham a Jew? And I'm not asking for a question or an answer to this question. I really want to take this as a little bit of an opportunity to talk about the Jews. We've been talking about Judaism. We've been talking about Judaizing teachers. The one thing we really haven't been talking about is what was this? What? Whenever you say the word Jew, what is it that you think of? Nobody thinks of anything. Okay, a nation of which you're born. Okay. What else? Someone that followed the law of Moses. Anything else? Okay. Someone who is circumcised. Anybody else? These are all very good things, and they hit on it. I had to cheat a little bit, as I often do. One of the things that I did, I pulled off of actually a Jewish website because, you know what, I wanted to see what do they define themselves. And I found out in reading that it's probably not very far from what first century Jews considered themselves. Look at this. In common speech, the word Jew is used to refer to all of the physical and spiritual descendants of Jacob or Israel, as well as to the patriarchs Abraham and Isaac and their wives. And the word Judaism is used to refer to their beliefs. And their website says technically this is not accurate. From a technical standpoint, Abraham wasn't a Jew. He was the father of the Jewish nation, wasn't he? But technically, even by their own workings, and you say to yourself, why is this important? I'm going to tell you why. It's important to note that being a Jew has nothing to do with what you believe or what you do. How does that square with what the writers in the New Testament say? Is that a true statement?
They were called Jews in every age.
Okay.
There's certain ages that they were called Jews, and it's primarily connected to their business practices.
Okay. Well, business practices, and I think also, as the first part of it said, it's also used to refer to their physical, mentioned to circumcision, and also their spiritual side. It really did encompass all aspects of their life. But think about that for a minute. If I told you that it was describing the spiritual descendants, is this second statement really accurate? Let me ask you another question this way. What is a Christian? A disciple of Christ. What else? Spiritual descendants of Israel or Christ. The spiritual descendants, that's going to be key. What else? Someone who follows what? The new law, the New Testament. So is it an accurate statement that it has nothing to do with what you believe or what you do? I would disagree with that. Even their own statement. It does have something to do with what you believe. And it does have something to do with what you do. Who were the physical descendants of Abraham was one thing. Who the spiritual descendants of Abraham was something very different. In this sense, Judaism is more like a nationality than like other religions. And being Jewish is like citizenship. The Jews themselves believed not that they were a spiritual nation. What were they? They were the physical nation of God. Okay? Now, you ask yourself, why is all this important? Well, I want to just talk about a couple of things, and this is going to be in review. The Jews sought justification of the law. Remember, turn back to Galatians real quick, Galatians 2:16. We've read this a few classes ago. Nevertheless, knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but through faith in Christ Jesus, even we have believed in Christ Jesus, that we may be justified by faith in Christ and not by works of the law. Since by works of the law shall no flesh be justified. What was it that these Jews believed or was trying to espouse to these Galatians? The law justifies. One of the key ingredients to justification to the Jews that became Christians was what? We've already said it once this morning. Was what? Everybody's kind of whispering it. Somebody say it out loud. What was the action? What were they trying to force on people? Circumcision. So they were trying to be justified by the law. They were trying to take the things that were in the Old Testament and make them binding. Paul argues you cannot be justified by it. The Jews sought justification in the law, yet they, by their own descriptions, were not Jews, law followers. It was a nationality that made you that way. Yet the law did not make someone a Jew. It was a function of one's birth, right? So who is a Jew? A Jew is a physical descendant of Abraham and the fathers. Physical descendant. I'll go one farther. In that same passage that I read, one of the things said that there were proselytes. We even talk about some of these in the New Testament. They talk about Jews going and converting people. Interesting to note that Orthodox Jews, at least from this particular reference, you may have been a Jew, but you weren't really Jewish. That's not what you, because you were not a physical descendant. You may have converted, you may have been following it, but they would not consider you that way because you were not a physical descendant. So the law could do nothing for someone when the physical attributes of that person couldn't be changed by it. Okay? This is going to become an important point whenever we start talking about our change and the spiritual Israel. That's very important. But in this particular case, the law could not justify because to be a Jew, it was a function of your birth. It was almost as if you had no choice at all. Yes, sir. Yes. Let's turn to John 8 for a minute. There in verse 31 beginning, because that's an excellent point. Jesus really goes into some of this same discussion with the Jews at that time. Beginning there in verse 31, he starts talking to Jews who had believed. I want to make that point very important. Okay, John 8:31. Jesus therefore was saying to those Jews who had believed him, if you abide in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine. Well, think about this discussion. If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples. How is that different from what the Jews believed in the old law? Or under the older times when they were under that law? By their own admission, it had nothing to do with what you believed and it had nothing to do with what you did. Well, we either are His people or we're not His people. It doesn't have anything to do with what we do. That was the concept that they had. All right? Some might say that this is very akin to the belief today in once saved, always saved. Well, I'm a Jew. There's nothing that I can do. I'm a person of God. I'm God's people. There's nothing that I can do to change that. Jesus is saying, wait a minute. That's not true. Look at what he says. If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. And then they go into a long dissertation about truth and about what their status was as far as people of God. And look at what they say down here in verse 39. And they answered and said to him, Abraham is our father. Jesus said to them, if you are Abraham's children, you would do the deeds of Abraham. It's not just enough to be born a Jew. You have to do the deeds of Abraham. Hence the reason why I like to throw that little question in there, was Abraham a Jew? Because he was neither a Jew by descent, but he was a Jew or a spiritual follower of God by what he did. Okay? And that is the key. And that's really the key to the question. And the answer is, he did what God said. Reading on down. But as it is, you are seeking to kill me, a man who has told you the truth, which I heard from God. This Abraham did not do. You are doing the deeds of your father. And he makes that statement very plain. They take it to be some slap to them, and they said to him, we were not born of fornication. We have one father, even God. Jesus said, if God were your father, you would love me, for I proceeded forth and have come from God, for I have not even come on my own initiative, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I am saying? It is because you cannot hear my words. You are of your father, the devil, and you want to do the desires of your father. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie. He speaks from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies. He establishes who their father was and whose descendant they were. And it wasn't God's, and it certainly wasn't Abraham's. It was Satan's. And why was it Satan's? Because they didn't do the deeds of Abraham. They did the deeds of Satan. So if we go back a few slides, it's very important, even under the old law, even under the definition of the people of God, the Jews, it is very important what you believe, and it is very important what you do. Thoughts or comments? All right. So, the law did not justify either. Turn back over to Galatians, the third chapter. Galatians 3. Paul has already argued, and again, we're kind of in review here, but Paul has already argued that the law did not justify. Now that no one is justified by the law before God is evident. For what? What did we discuss about this? What justified Abraham? His faith did. Again, nailing to the point to the Jews that were here in that day, it's not being a Jew. That's not what we're talking about. It's about being a person of God. That was the key point. That was what justified. Justification was based upon faith and obedience. So, let me ask you a question. How was Abraham justified? He was justified by faith. But this point is very important. Somebody read Galatians 3, 6 and 7 for me. You'll volunteer to. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Even so, Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. Therefore, be sure that it is those who are of faith who are the sons of Abraham.
Does it mention anything about the law whatsoever? And with good reason, because the law couldn't justify. The law could not justify. So I'm going to ask a little bit of a thought question, asking you to read my mind. Trust me, it's a short read. So then if that's the case, if Abraham was not justified by the law, then how are we justified today? Yes, sir. Yes.
By faith, just as we are justified by faith. And I mean, so we're justified by faith.
Yeah, that's right. So I want to be real careful when I say this because I don't want anyone to misunderstand me. The law that we are under today does not justify us. Has anyone in here been able to keep the whole law perfectly? Please raise your hand. So if we're going in that same direction and we're trying to get justification because of what we do, we have to be very careful. That is the extension that Roman gives to us, is the law is there. And don't get me wrong, obedience is required. And just like it was under the old law, not doing what you should under the old law is the same as not doing what you should under the new law. But be careful about the justification. Justification is a gift for us. It is by faith. And it's based upon the things that we read and the things that we do. It's faith paired with obedience. Faith paired with obedience. James tells us what about the demons? If you're just talking about belief, and I'm going to use belief and faith here as a parallel. If you're just talking about belief, what happens to the demons? They believe in what? Tremble. Okay? They know who God is. Even during the time of Christ, I think about the demon that named himself Legion. I think about the man in Gennesaret that Legion was removed from. What did Legion say about Jesus? I know who you are. Don't hurt me. Don't bind me up. The demons understood who Jesus was. They understand even when we go to Paul and others. Because what happens in Acts, whenever someone who was not a follower of Jesus tried to cast out the demons? Does anybody remember? The demon jumped on them. Okay? Paul we know, Peter we've heard of, Jesus we understand, who are you? Okay? So don't just bank on that piece of it. Obedience is involved, but it's chiefly by faith. And I would add in there also, it's by grace and mercy, because none of us have kept it. The penalty for sin is death, and we can't take that away. But the grace of God fills in those gaps when we can't. Any questions or comments about this? So let me ask you one question one more time. Is it clear whether Abraham was a Jew or not? The point of the question is what Abraham did, not who he was. Okay? And it's going to become more apparent throughout the lesson. So let's talk for a few minutes. This is where we're going to start dividing this up. My goal today is to get through the first section and as much of the second section as we can. So we're going to talk this morning about the covenant and the law. So when we talk about the covenant and the law, we have to really understand what those two are. Those two are not the same thing. Okay? Does everybody understand that? If not, hopefully by the end of this we will. The covenant and the law are not the same thing. Let's go back and do a little history lesson. Go ahead and turn back to Genesis, the 12th chapter. Because Paul does a wonderful job of laying this out in argument. And I know there, at least some of the people that I've talked with in the past, there's been some confusion on the two. Somebody would like to read Genesis 12, the first three verses for me. Go ahead, Mike. All right, so a 75-year-old Abraham is sitting in Haran. God comes to him and tells him, pick up your stuff and leave. This isn't where I want you. I'm going to take you to a place and I'm going to give you that land to your descendants. And I'm going to make you a great nation. And I'm going to bless everyone who blesses you. And I am going to bless the families of the earth through you. All right? By faith, we find out in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, he did exactly that. Okay? He gets up and he leaves. And he goes to that land. He occupies parts of that land for a while. It's not his. He is sojourning in that land. But God promises him, I'm going to give it to you. Turn over to the 15th chapter now. And we're just going to pick some verses out of this passage because you really have to read the whole chapter to get the gist of it. But hopefully we can pick out some of the things. The promises are reiterated to him at this point in time. And the context of this is whenever he's promised a son. He's a little doubtful, okay? By this time, he's probably 85 years old, somewhere around in that. I don't know many 85-year-olds even then that is documented that had kids. So he is concerned, a little doubtful maybe. And God tells him, do not fear, Abraham, verse 1. I'm a shield to you. Your reward shall be great. Abraham said to him, O Lord God, what wilt thou give me since I am childless and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus? And Abraham, and then behold, the word of the Lord came to him saying, this man will not be your heir, but one who shall come forth from your own body, he shall be your heir. And he goes through and he reiterates, he takes him out, he looks at the stars. He said, look, it's going to be as many as the stars. If you can count them, you can count your descendants. So they're reiterated to him. We're going to go now to chapter 17. Chapter 17. This is where the covenant is established with Abraham. Up until this time, it's been promises. Up until this time, God is talking to Abraham. Abraham is acting by faith. Here, God actually makes the covenant with him. In verses 1 and 2, he establishes, let's start in verse 2. And I will establish my covenant between me and you, and I will multiply you exceedingly. And Abraham fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, as for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be the father of a multitude of nations. No longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be Abraham, for I will make you the father of a multitude of nations. So, God establishes this covenant between him and Abraham. Okay? That's very key and important. But I have to ask you a question. In reading this passage, the covenant, were the promises of the covenant conditional? I'm going somewhere with this, and I hope you'll follow me with a little bit of faith here. Were the promises of the covenant conditional? I want to read you, beginning in verse 6, and I'm just going to read a few words out of each verse. I will, verse 6, make you exceedingly fruitful. In verse 6, I will make a nation of you. Verse 7, I will establish my covenant between me and you. Verse 8, I will give to you and to your descendants after you the land of your sojournings. Were the promises conditional? You read 1 through 8, and you read 15 and 16, and what I see there is the promises of that covenant being unconditional. God establishes, because of your faith, because you followed me, because you did what I said, I'm going to do this for you. Look at the number of times he said, I will, I shall, or I already have. Look at the number of times. And not once does he lay a condition on that. I'm going to argue with you that God's part of that covenant was unconditional. His intention to do for Abraham because of Abraham's faith had already been established. The covenant with Abraham on God's part was unconditional. Those things would happen. The real question is, what was Abraham's and his descendants' part? So let's go in verses 9 through 14. God said further to Abraham, "Now as for you," okay, this is what I'm going to do for you. "But as for you, you shall keep my covenant and your descendants after you throughout their generations. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised." And he goes on down for this, and he talks about that circumcision and the conditions of it. Man's part was circumcision. That was man's part of the covenant. God's promises were established. Now, how long was this to happen? How long was the covenant to maintain? That's going to be a good question for the remainder of this. Because this covenant and the law, we're going to start seeing are running a little differently than most concepts. Circumcision was a condition of the covenant, but it was not a condition of the law. Okay? Now, what I mean by that is this. What established circumcision as the covenant? God did with the covenant. The law, it was continued. But what was the covenant? The covenant was for the promises, and that was circumcision. Have we mentioned the law yet? Circumcision is mentioned in the law, but have we mentioned the law yet in this discussion? It hasn't come yet. Circumcision, what Paul is getting at is circumcision goes far beyond the law. It really, in some senses, had nothing to do with the law. It was the establishment of God's between Him and His people. Circumcision was that piece that said, "You are mine. This is the part of you that's going to tell others that I'm His. It's going to be your part in this covenant between God and man." Questions or comments on this so far? Yes, sir.
And this is open to discussion. Because I don't understand the covenant is easily, you might come away with the idea that Abraham had no voice in the promise. God understood the covenant, but Abraham still had to make certain decisions.
Absolutely.
It was conditional to his obedience to God's plan.
But here's where I agree with you, but let me tell you where I'm coming from. I think the passage is here. He had already been obedient, and he had already shown faith. The covenant that God made with Abraham was as a result of what he had done. Remember Hebrews 11. We talk about by faith Abraham did this. Well, what was it that Abraham did? Haran. That was 10 years ago. God sees the faith of Abraham. He sees the belief, and He establishes that covenant based on the actions that He's already carried out. Exactly. Now, I'm going to take a little sidestep here. What was the point of this? What was the point of the covenant? We really need to talk about that for a minute, because the point of the covenant is really important. But let's talk about the law for a minute, okay? The covenant promises are going to come into play. But the law is first. Now, this is mine. You can disagree with the years. It really does not matter to me. I had to find the closest representation of a timeline, and I kind of made it myself. So forgive me if the years are a little bit off. But the point that Paul is making in Galatians, and the point that I am trying to make is, if you're talking about the law, you're missing the point of circumcision by 430 years. If you're seeking to be justified by the law as a Jew because of circumcision, you've missed that ship by 430 years. Because circumcision was a condition of the covenant that God made with man. Okay? It was extended in the law because the law was supposed to be for the Jews. But look at what happened. About 1875 BC, Promises are made to Abraham, the three promises. And we haven't gone over them yet, but does everybody remember what those three promises were? The land promise, the seed promise, the nation promise. Hold a pause on that because we're going to go through that hopefully here before the end of class. But they missed that by 430 years. Paul makes the argument. Let's turn back to Galatians. Paul makes that as an argument, doesn't he? Galatians, the third chapter. Let's take a few minutes and read verses 15 through 18, if somebody would like to do that. 15 through 18, volunteers. Yes, sir, through 18.
And this I say, that the covenant that was confirmed before of God in Christ, the law which was 430 years after, cannot disannul that it should make the promise of none effect. For if the inheritance be of the law, it is no more of promise. But God gave it to Abraham by promise.
So, speaking of the law and the covenant, Paul makes the argument there in verse 17 that 430 years, and look at what he says again. I'm going to read 17 again, because this is where he's going with this. What I'm saying is this, the law, which came 430 years later, does not invalidate the covenant that was previously ratified by God, so as to nullify the promises. The three promises did not come by the law. The land, the nation, and the seed. It came by the covenant. The law does not supersede the covenant, but the law, we're going to find out, has another function for the covenant. Does everybody get that? Does everybody understand that piece? I don't want to leave that because that's imperative. You've got the covenant here that's in existence, has been in existence for 430 years. The law comes along and some, evidently, of the Jewish people think, well, now it's the law. It's not the covenant. It's kind of like they joke about a monorail mind. They can't think about more than one thing at a time. No, God made that covenant, made those promises, and they're not changing. So the law. Let's turn back to Exodus 19 real quick. We're only going to get through one of these today, but we'll get through the other two Wednesday. Exodus 19. Whenever the children leave the land of Egypt, and by the way, I do want to just a side note, 430 years, there are papers that have been written about, was it 430 years from the time the promises were made, which is how I represented it, or was it 430 years they were in Egypt? I don't think the point of Paul's argument is to precisely calculate the years, is to say that there was a period of time in between. If you would like to talk about that, I do have some very good information that would argue the 430 years were from the promises and not from the 430 years they were in Egypt. But we'll leave that for another time. Exodus, the 19th chapter. Whenever they leave, God, and they approach Mount Sinai, in verses 3 through 8 of 19, God reiterates the promises to the children of Israel. Moses goes up on the mountain, and the Lord called him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the sons of Israel, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the sons of Israel." So Moses called the elders of the people and set before them all these words which the Lord had commanded him. And all the people answered and said, "All that the Lord has spoken, we will do." And Moses brought the words of the people back to the Lord. He reiterates the covenant to them. I'm going to do this thing, okay? If you will do your part, you will be my people. And you say, "Well, Michael, wait a minute. I thought you said it was unconditional." I want to bring back one recollection to you. Do you remember when God was going to destroy the people and Moses interceded? He was a mediator. What was it that God could have done and raised up children to fulfill the promise? Rocks. Rocks. Point being to God is, I'm going to do my part. If you don't do your part, I'll find someone that will. Abraham, your father, did his part. That's why I made these promises with him. Do your part. So yes, in that sense, God calls it into condition that you still have to be obedient, just like your father Abraham did. But I'm going to fulfill my part. But in chapter 20, what does he do? What does chapter 20 and following of Exodus document for us? The law. They're separate. They're two completely different things. Two completely different purposes. Two completely different reasons for them to exist. One conditional, one unconditional. God saw them as two different things Himself. So why is this important? You're going to have to wait till Wednesday night to find out at least why I think it's important. I would ask you to continue reading and thinking about it in this light. Yes, sir. It will. We will get to that. But you are right. Thank you very much for your comments. Ma'am. I do what I can when I can. We'll just say it that way.